It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up, or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning, this Tuesday edition of Sandy Rios. My name is Walker Wildman, and I'm sitting in guest hosting for Sandy Rios this morning. Glad to have you with us on the show. You can always visit our website, AFR.net. AFR.net is our website. You can also download the American Family Radio app on your smartphone or your tablet device. So many ways to keep up with American Family Radio, to keep up with Sandy Rios in the morning. Good to have you with us today. Our fall share-a-thon is coming up in October, and we take listener testimonies each share-a-thon, and that's what we're going to do in the next few weeks heading into, well, the next month or two heading into the fall and heading into October. And so what we'll do next segment is I'll give out the phone number that you can call and you can give share your listener testimony with American Family Radio. Keep it under about a minute or two. And what we do there is people who've had their lives impacted by American Family Radio, we will air those testimonies heading into our share-a-thon. And it's very encouraging because some of you may know this, but when you do radio, you're just talking into a microphone, and you really don't know, number one, who's listening, and number two, what kind of effect you're having on their life, whether it be positive or negative. And so having testimonies is very encouraging, just like when you have testimonies at church, so on and so forth. God has a special purpose and design for people testifying of how their lives have been changed by the gospel of Jesus Christ. First topic I want to talk about is not even on any of my news stories that I got in my stack here, but I heard it during the break, and then I looked up this op-ed piece. But if you just listen to our news, American Family News, right before the show started, then you heard a news story about these a couple of doctors who wrote an op-ed in the USA Today, and here's the title of the op-ed of the opinion piece in the USA Today. Defeat COVID-19 by requiring vaccinations for all. It's not un-American, it's patriotic. That's the header of the op-ed. Then it goes on to say, make vaccines free. Don't allow religious or personal objections and create disincentives for those who refuse vaccines, shown to be safe and effective. And then you've got three doctors listed that are the authors of this op-ed. And it goes on and goes on a couple, maybe 1,000 words or more about why everyone should get a vaccine. And here's what I'll say to that. And this, the good thing about my argument here is I don't even really have to get into the effectiveness of the vaccine, although that's a pretty good discussion. But I'm not injecting something in my body that the government has rushed to put out in the past 6 months that has very little evidence or studies behind it proving the, number one, whether it even works, and number two, the side effects. And so that's pretty much my reasoning. But then I can get into how even Dr. Fauci says that on a good day, 40% of the shots will work. That's on a good day. So can you imagine, I tell people this analogy, can you imagine going to the doctor and let's just say you have an infection, some kind of infection, And the doctor says, you know, there's these things called antibiotics, and they work about 4 out of 10 times, but I'm going to give it to you, and you're going to pay for it, and I'm going to inject you with it, and then you just let me know in about a week whether it works or not. No, that doesn't happen. Antibiotics work like the vast majority of the time, unless someone has some kind of odd, you know, ailment or whatever that it doesn't work against. But the vast majority of medicines that doctors give you, they work. That's why they give them to you. They say, here's a medicine that'll make you feel better, so go take it. But with this, it's like, you know, this might make you feel better. There's like a 4 in 10 chance it will, but we're going to give it to you anyway, and you're going to pay for it, and the government's going to pay for it. So I'm not injecting myself with something that was just rushed together in the past 6 to 12 months that we don't really know what it does or whether it even works. So that's my reasoning, and no way on this earth I'm going to have these three doctors that I don't even know from the USA Today tell me I've got to inject myself with something I don't know what it is. But there you have it. That's the extent that people will go to. And the sad thing about this is they're doing this in the name of public health, in the name of wanting everyone to be healthy. But what they don't understand they're doing in the midst of their righteous mission here is they're completely doing away with any form of privacy, that any kind of idea that our persons, our bodies, should be governed by ourselves. That's what they're doing away with, and that's problematic. And problematic is putting it lightly. Shifting gears to a couple other stories, you know, I got on a postal service rabbit trail yesterday, and you know, I did a little bit more reading even after the show, and there was a few other things that I wanted to mention just to kind of close this out. I don't like leaving discussions and topics open-ended. But the first thing is that the issues with the Postal Service, this is not a new topic. This is not a issue that just happened in August of 2020. No, the U.S. Postal Service has been having problems dating back over a decade, nearly two decades, actually. And I'm just going to list a few things here. But the number one, Amazon has really been taking advantage, and President Trump has spoken about this, but Amazon has really been taking advantage of the U.S. Postal Service. Once again, this is not a new thing. This has been going on for years. Amazon's been around for a little while. And there was a 2017 study by Citibank, and it concluded in its study of the U.S. Postal Service and their agreement with Amazon that the Postal Service undercharged package customers. I'm reading from this Business Insider story. U.S. Postal Service undercharged package customers like Amazon by $1.46 per package. Which means every time the U.S. Postal Service delivers a package for Amazon, the U.S. taxpayers subsidize that by $1.50. And so when you have the U.S. Postal Service delivering hundreds of millions of packages a year, and yes, well, not all of them are packages every year, but the total count, but I think the Postal Service last year delivered over 1 billion items. And when you've got a country of 330 million people, that's easy to do. Every person gets three things, and there you've delivered nearly 1 billion items. But anyway, that was interesting. So $1.50 per package. Every time U.S. Postal Service delivers a package for someone like Amazon, they lose $1.50. And guess who makes that? Who pays for that? We end up paying for that. We're going to pay for it next week when Pelosi brings the House back and they spend $25 billion on the Postal Service. Another article, this dates back to 2013. This is a story published in 2013, but it's talking about the year of fiscal year 2012. The agency, talking about the U.S. Postal Service, reported a loss of nearly $9 billion last year. Some of this comes from years-long decline in first-class mail and other issues. Then it gets into talking about how much the U.S. Postal Service is putting aside for their pension plan. Their pension plan is equals over their liabilities, if you will, or what they owe out in pension money, is over $330 billion. $330 billion for the U.S. Postal Service. And you look at someone like FedEx or UPS, theirs together combined is like $47 billion combined, so 20-something billion apiece. And the U.S. Postal Service owes their retirees $330 billion. And they don't even have that money. They're short on that money. They don't even have that money in the bank to pay their retirees. One more thing. This is from 2016. Well, this was published yesterday, but it's citing a 2016 report. And the Obama administration, here's a headline. The Obama administration removed thousands of mailboxes. A pair of USPS Inspector General reports provide details regarding the removal of thousands of mailboxes in the U.S. And during Obama's second term, people complained that too many mailboxes were taken away. Nationally, listen to this, and we think Trump's a problem, listen to this. Nationally, the number of collection boxes declined by more than 12,000 in the 5 years under Obama's second term, or the end of his first term and all of his second term. So the U.S. Postal Service under President Obama removed more than 12,000 drop-off boxes. And so you see these pictures circulating on Twitter, these fake pictures, claiming that Trump's removing box P.O. boxes, drop-off boxes, blah, blah, blah. That's all a lie. That happened under Obama's watch. But people believe it. And of course, Twitter leaves it up even though it's fake news. And so before we believe that somehow Trump is sabotaging the U.S. Postal Service, let's think again. Because here's the thing. I'm not even sure much has changed with the inner workings of the U.S. Postal Service in the last few months, other than the fact that they're just overwhelmed. The volume that they're trying to deliver with Amazon and the rest of them piggybacking on the U.S. Postal Service, the volume that they're trying to deliver is probably unreasonable. They probably just don't have the manpower. But turning that into a Trump problem, arguably you could turn it into a Democrat problem, because they're the ones that think we should all stay at our house and order everything offline, and we shouldn't go out anywhere, and we shouldn't go to church. And so arguably you could make the case that it's the Democrats that are overwhelming our U.S. Postal Service system. But I digress. Moving on to another topic. I'm going to play a clip here. This is, I'll wait till after the break. After the break, I'm going to play Representative Ayanna Pressley from Massachusetts. She's a congresswoman. And you'll be surprised what you hear there. But one story to lead us into the break here. In Virginia, you know, we've had these, the media likes to call them protests. I call them, I don't know, riots. That's even putting it pretty mildly. But we've had these anarchists and these chaos leaders doing all kind of criminal activity across our country in the name of, I don't even know what they're trying to do. They claim that they want, you know, racial justice, even though there's only one race, the human race. They want to end police brutality, but here you have a Virginia Democrat, a state Democrat, and a local NAACP president, both charged with felonies for monument destruction, messing with federal monuments. So good for all the prosecutors, some accountability taking place there. We'll talk more about this topic after the break. Sandy Rios in the Morning is the show. I'm your guest host, Walker Wildman. We'll be back in a few minutes.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance. And MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month, but you might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs, and because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by August 31st, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch, like more than 400,000 people already have. And start saving. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Patrick Pezzella, the United States Deputy Secretary of Labor. Mr. Pezzella oversees the day-to-day operation of the Department of Labor and is the second highest ranking official in the department. Colossians 3:23 reminds us of the importance of working hard. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for human masters. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Patrick Pezzella as he helps lead the Department of Labor. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text #250. With the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Jude Peterson and Tristan Charbonnel are budding entrepreneurs. The 13-year-old boys own a lemonade stand in Peoria, Illinois. The other day, the fellas were the victims of an armed robbery. Two guys wearing hoodies demanded their cash box. The whole thing caught on a neighbor's surveillance video, which you can see, by the way, at toddstearns.com. It turns out the bad guys got away with about $30, but this story has a happy ending. The police officers who responded to the crime scene were so impressed with the teenage boys, they bought $20 worth of lemonade. And when folks around the neighborhood heard about what happened, they stopped by to donate even more money to replenish their stock, proving once again that old adage, when life steals your lemons, well, you can still make lemonade. Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download my free podcast at toddstearns.com.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning. Welcome back to the show. We're in our second segment here, this Tuesday edition of Sandy Rios in the Morning. A lot of different things we're talking about here. We just wrapped up the discussion about the U.S. Postal Service. We kind of closed that topic that we began yesterday. A lot of interesting stuff to learn there. And my only advice is don't let the media and the Democrats fool you. The U.S. Postal Service has been having problems for years now, as cited in the news articles and the research I just told you about before the break. And then we were talking about the really the Democrats and their anarchist companions on the streets trying to destroy America. And you know, I don't know how this is good for our country, and we know it's not good for our country, but I have no explanation for the actions of these Democrats across the country and the leaders of these cities who are just letting them be destroyed. I have no conclusion other than they just don't like America. And that's putting it mildly. Some would say they hate America. But the actions of a major political party in our country can only lead someone to believe that they just don't like our country, because I don't believe that it's like incompetence, which can happen. But it's across the board. It's every Democrat-run city. I was listening to a video yesterday, and they were talking about how like the top 20 worst cities to live in, especially for minorities, are all Democrat-run cities. Maybe even more than that, maybe 30 or 40 cities. But it's one thing to be incompetent, but there's no way that all these mayors and governors that are all have a D by their name, that they're all incompetent. All at the same time, and their incompetence is leading them to do the same things. And that is fostering an environment of lawlessness and chaos and violence. And so before the break, I was talking about this Virginia state Democrat. He's actually a state senator there in Virginia, charged with two felonies for her involvement in the destruction of a Confederate monument. Listen to the media here. This is Breitbart too. Shame on them. Listen to the language here. A Democrat Virginia state senator has been charged with two felonies for her involvement in the destruction of a Confederate monument, listen to this, during a protest in Portsmouth, if I'm pronouncing that right, in Virginia, according to local authorities. So, that's not a protest. That's destruction of property, whatever you want to call it, anarchy, lawlessness, during their criminal acts. What's going on is anything but protest. Moving on in the story here, the destruction of the monument, here's the P word again, the destruction of the monument came during a protest on June 10th in Old Town and has led to felony charges of conspiracy to commit a felony and felony injury to a monument in excess of $1,000 placed against State Senator Lois Lucas and the local NAACP chapter president, James Boyd. And a local school board member also participated in the destruction of federal property. I would be interested to know, before I cast judgment, on whether the NAACP, the national NAACP, has denounced their local chapter president's actions. Maybe some of you can look that up. I don't know if they have. Maybe they have. Wouldn't surprise me if they haven't. But there you have it. These are some key players in the Democrat Party in Virginia destroying federal property in the name of protesting. The clip I was going to play before the break is, this is Representative Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts, and she's talking about how, well, we need more unrest in our streets. Clip three, let's listen.
This is as much about public outcry and organizing and mobilizing and applying pressure so that this GOP-led Senate and that these governors that continue to carry water for this administration, putting the American peoples in harm's way, turning a deaf ear to the needs of our families and our communities, hold them accountable.
Well,
make the phone call, send the email, show up. You know, there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there's unrest in our lives. And unfortunately, there's plenty to go around.
Well, there you have it. She was kind of doing good there, doing the typical Democrat talking points there for the first part of the clip. And then at the end, she just had to let it fly. And she said, we need unrest in our streets until there's no more unrest in our hearts. Well, if that's the threshold for looting and rioting and beating up people and killing people and assaulting police officers, just because we have unrest in our lives, that is a very low threshold, because there's a lot of people, including me, some days of the week, where I could say, well, I've got unrest in my heart. So I go down to torch a local business. I'm just going to burn it down to make me feel better, like these anarchists are doing. These are really insurgents. You could easily justify deploying active duty military to squash this insurgency, because look, they're doing this all across the country. We're going on 90 days of this anarchy. And they're using terroristic type measures or tactics to assault law enforcement. And you have local prosecutors who are doing nothing about it. To further this discussion, there was a Seattle, along with Portland and other cities, have been dealing with this terrorism in their city. And just this week, the Seattle Police Department had 6 officers injured after they were targeted with explosive devices. Another word for that they use in the Middle East is IEDs. If you're in the military, you know about that. So we have IEDs, improvised explosive devices, being used in the streets of America. And, well, there were only 18 arrests. But the problem is not law enforcement, particularly. Although in some cities like Portland, where they stood down, that is a problem. But one of the main issues here is that, yeah, we've got these anarchists, these terrorists, these domestic terrorists, but we're not prosecuting them to the fullest extent of the law. And so we have these, I'm going to call them compromised. We have these compromised prosecutors at the local level and at the state level, and they refuse to put these criminals in jail. They refuse to put the criminals in jail. And so what happens? The police arrest them, such as these 18 arrests that happened the other night. And guess what? The terrorists, the domestic terrorists, are out the next night on the streets doing the same thing. So it's very well possible that you could have these domestic terrorists that have, I don't know, been arrested 30 times in the last 2 months, and they're back on the streets. So the police are just fighting this endless battle, quite literally, this endless battle in America's streets. And we have compromised prosecutors that really make them unfit for office, who are not prosecuting the terrorists to the fullest extent of the law. I'm going to give out the number, and then after the break, in about 6 or 7 minutes, we'll take calls. The number to call in to the show, and we can talk about a couple of the topics that we talked about. We wrapped up the Postal Service discussion. We talked about the Democrats being arrested in Virginia, charged with felonies, and the environment of terrorism and anarchy that they're fostering across the country. The number to call in is 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. I want to talk about Governor Chris Cuomo. He was on the DNC convention last night. He gave a little speech. And I'm going to play clip 4 here. This is Governor Cuomo just bragging about how well New York State handled the coronavirus. Clip 4, let's listen.
Yes, we will set up testing and tracing and do whatever we need to do to mobilize to win this battle, because we are America. We win wars, and we are the greatest country on the globe. And for all the pain and all the tears, our way worked, and it was beautiful. We showed that our better angels are strong and that Americans will rise to their call. We saw that even at the end of the day, even if it is a long day, that love wins.
Well, doesn't that sound great? Except New York State is responsible for over 30,000 coronavirus-related deaths. And here's the thing. I wouldn't typically talk about how a politician or an elected official is responsible for someone dying, because that is a stretch. So let's just put it this way. Governor Cuomo, by the way, the Democrats don't mind blaming President Trump for deaths, but Governor Cuomo, in March, March 25th, I believe is the date. He did a, basically enacted a policy statewide, which forced nursing home facilities, long-term living facilities, to accept COVID-positive patients. Might I remind you, while they are still positive for coronavirus. So what did that do? That sent, basically, literally, sent the coronavirus into New York State nursing facilities. Intentionally. And that's why nearly a third of their statewide deaths are from nursing facilities. Some say it was 6,000, some say it was 8,000, some say it was even more than that that died in nursing facilities in New York State. And so Governor Cuomo has no room to say that the New York way worked. A couple other stories on this topic. When it comes to how much taxpayers spent on the coronavirus, as far as these field hospitals that many of them weren't even used. This is from the Chicago Sun-Times. This is talking about a field hospital that was set up in Chicago. Chicago, I don't know exactly where this money came from unless it was from the city, but the city's pretty much broke now. So it easily could have been with the help of the federal government. But nonetheless, the story is still the same. Chicago spent $66 million, not $66,000, not $660,000, or even $6 million. Chicago spent $66 million on a field hospital with 2,750 beds. So that's one thing that... That many beds cost $66 million, but it only treated 38 patients. 38 patients throughout the entire existence of this field hospital. 38 patients total were treated at this convention center. $66 million to treat 38 patients, that ends up being about $1.7 million per patient. Remember, the Navy sent the Mercy ship, to Los Angeles. That ship can treat over 1,000 patients, that boat, big boat. And it treated 77 patients while in Los Angeles. Last story on this topic, the hospital ship Comfort, another Navy ship, departed New York City after treating 200 patients. And this ship can treat, it has 1,200 crew members and 1,000 beds, and it treated 182 patients in the course of a few months. I only bring that up, not that that's a retrospective or looking back. Sure, I mean, you could say, well, you know, we overdid it. And I think it's true, we did. But the main thing that the reason I wanted to bring that up is the same people who were saying that we were going to have 1 to 2 million people in America die in 6 months over this were the same people who were saying that we need thousands of new beds in these convention centers all across the country, and we're going to spend, I don't know, hundreds of millions doing it. And their doomsday scenario really never came to pass. And some of these folks are the same people we're listening to now. So consider that. Sandy Rios in the morning. We'll be back after the break in a few minutes.
Dear 1 million moms, I've always thought that maybe your organization was making a mountain out of a molehill.
But today, I cannot believe what I just saw on my TV.
Concerned about the trash flowing into your home through today's media that simply will not censor itself? Make your voice heard. If you see trash in the media, tell us. Use the Submit Trash button at 1millionmoms.com. That's 1millionmoms.com. And thanks.
Jesus responded, "It is not what goes into the mouth that defiles a person, but what comes out of the mouth proceeds from the heart."
Abraham Hamilton III.
Out of the heart comes murder, out of the heart comes theft.
The Hamilton Quarter.
Now, why am I saying this so emphatically? Could it be that professing Christ followers don't really love their neighbors as they say they do?
Weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
The Lord hates haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Five-year-old Cannon Hennant was playing outside of his father's home in Wilson, North Carolina, when his 25-year-old next-door neighbor walked up to little Cannon, produced a handgun, and blew him away at point-blank range. Cannon's 7- and 8-year-old siblings witnessed his murder. Doris Labrant, a neighbor from across the street, also witnessed the murder. The value of life has become so insignificant in our society that children are now murdered inside and outside of the womb.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. New York dealt with the Chinese virus by shutting everything down, schools, businesses, and churches. Sweden dealt with the virus by shutting nothing down. And yet both places have reached near zero deaths at the same time with almost identical antibody levels. All places at near zero deaths have the same antibody levels today, whether they locked down or not, whether they wore masks or not, whether schools were open or closed. Sweden reached the same results as those places that locked everything down and forced everybody to wear masks. The point here is that no matter how careful a jurisdiction is, this bug has a life of its own, and no amount of social strangling is going to help. If lockdowns don't work, then we have crippled the greatest economy in human history for absolutely no reason.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Great news, folks. When asked yesterday about the natural supplement oleandrin, President Trump declared that, quote, "we're looking at it," unquote, in connection with his administration's efforts to defeat the Chinese Communist Party virus. In other words, despite media claims that this product known as Ceratavir is unproven, Mr. Trump knows better. In fact, this oleandrin molecule has been proven safe in myriad clinical experiments and successfully tested in laboratory and limited human trials against COVID-19. All that is needed now is for the Food and Drug Administration to allow further life-saving testing to be done with Ceratavir. Alternatively, it can simply clear the way for this oleandrin product to be sold as a natural supplement. Either way, the American people must promptly be afforded the opportunity to be spared the further ravages of the CCP virus and to get our country back. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Sandy Rios in the Morning. My name is Walker Wildman, and I'm your guest host today on the show. One thing I wanted to mention before we jump to calls today is listener testimonies. You can call in to American Family Radio and share how American Family Radio has impacted your life. The phone number to call in, and when you call in this number, you can leave a 1 to 2 minute, 2 minute being the most, voicemail, just giving us your testimony and how AFR has impacted your life. The phone number to call in is 877-876-8893, 877-876-8893. Call in, share your testimony. We'll jump straight to the phones. We'll go to Jane in Oregon. Jane, welcome to Sandy Rios.
Good morning. It's a little early here, but I wanted to comment on the hydroxychloroquine problems. One speaker that I heard stated that the countries that were not allowed to use hydroxychloroquine were Australia, New Zealand, U.S., Canada, and Western Europe. And it kind of, why are these countries, why are we not allowed to use it while the rest of the world can use it? Why are we slated to make Fauci and Gates and the other patent holders, that vaccine patent holders, multi-millions, billions of dollars? Something is rotten in Denmark.
Yeah. So you're talking, but Denmark, is that an analogy?
That's an analogy.
Okay. Got it. Jane, that's a good point. And I know hydroxychloroquine is available in some states, many states, but then to your point, some state governors or health boards are blocking it. But the studies are out there on the effectiveness of it, many studies actually, and it's been around for decades. So it's not a new medicine. It's not a back alley medicine. It's a very reputable medicine. I don't understand either why the root purpose behind blocking its usage between a doctor and a patient, and that should be their own decision to make. Thanks for calling in, Jane. We'll go to Joe, and we're not going to go to Joe. Yes, we are going to go to Joe, but we're going to go to Arkansas and talk to Joe. Joe, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you very much. I wanted to make a comment on those doctors that wrote the article advocating mandatory vaccination for the Wu flu in the USA Today, and that's this. If they were honest, if they were really wanted to do the right thing, then I think what they would want to do is say, well, the government should recommend this vaccine if they think it is really safe and effective. And if it's really effective, like they claim it is, then those that choose to take it, they will be protected, so we don't need to worry about them. Then their only legitimate concern there would be if somebody that does not want to take the vaccine gets sick from the Wu flu, that government money, taxpayers' money, will have to be spent on their medical care. Hmm. And so what they should do is I think the way they should go about it is say the government will recommend this vaccine, and then anyone that does not take the vaccine, if they get sick from the Wu flu, then no public money will be spent on their medical care. They'll be responsible for their own treatment if they happen to get the Wu flu, if they refuse to take the vaccine.
Yeah.
I think that would be the honest way to do it.
Right. Yeah, Joe, you're making too much sense here, because the government can't make sense when they're making decisions. I'm kidding there. But to your point, and really this has to do with many of the vaccines, but the vaccines protect the person who injects themselves with it, supposedly, assuming they work. And so I don't know why anyone has a problem with people not taking it. Because after all, it protects the one who takes it. So, and not to mention, we shouldn't, thanks for the call, Joe. Appreciate that, man. I'm not taking a shot, a really untested shot, unproven shot of something into my body, when without the shot, I have a 99.99999% chance of surviving. So I'm better off. It's more compelling to tell me that I need to change my diet, maybe, to be healthier, or I need to go walking every day, or I need to do various pretty easy habits to make sure my body functions better and I don't get diabetes, or I'm not obese, or I don't have heart issues and this and that. But to tell me I need to take a shot on something I have a 99.99% chance of surviving, that's a very uncompelling argument, to say the least. We'll go to Kyle in Tennessee. Kyle, welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
I just wanted to say I tuned in, and I was kind of in disbelief to hear a Christian radio station talking about the protesters as terrorists, domestic terrorists. I think that if you read the Gospels well, you'll see a Jesus who was on the side of the oppressed, and he was constantly and consistently fighting for a better life for those who were oppressed by the state, and I think he was put to death for it. You kind of sounded like the state police in Mississippi and Alabama during the civil rights movement, and I think you'll find yourself on the wrong side of history.
Yeah, Kyle, who exactly here is oppressed?
In this situation, the Black Lives Movement, we're hoping to make a better life for African Americans in America.
Okay, and how do these people committing criminal acts improve the lives of minorities?
It's the fact that the system, the justice system, was written by rich white folks for rich white folks, and it's time for justice to roll down the mountains like water, and we've got to shine a light on it consistently.
Okay.
Until something changes. If you look, you know, you'll remember the story of Jesus going in and turning the tables over in the temple.
Yeah.
He did that because the religious organization was exploiting the poor. They had to come with a certain sacrifice, and they were charging, you know, huge amounts of money.
Okay.
He not only did he go in and tear stuff up, but
right.
he went and made a whip out of cord.
Sure.
Like because he was, his life represented the fact that the church being married to the state, like it sounds like your proposition here, is oppressive.
Yeah. All right. So here's the thing, Kyle. So I disagree with your premise that our system is set up to unequally punish minorities. I disagree with the premise, but just for the sake of discussion, we'll accept your premise for the next few minutes till I get off the show, and then I'll dismiss it. But you think, from what you're saying, the best way to fix a system is to literally destroy it through anarchy and criminal acts.
No, I'm saying you don't get to choose how the oppressed react to oppression. You don't get to choose that. I don't get to choose that.
So they don't fall under our laws in each state and in our country?
You choose to spotlight a very low minority.
No, you're not answering my question, Kyle. You're not answering my question on whether criminal acts to reach a certain goal, a political goal, is acceptable.
Well, you know, when you look at the whole, that's like 2% of actually what's happening.
No, that's not true, Kyle.
It kind of sounds like a brainwashing. You don't want to spotlight the ways in which the movement can change America for the better. You want to
take, no, Kyle.
All right. About all of them as criminals, and that what that does for your listeners is it puts them all in one big group.
Okay.
And makes them think that the others who are peacefully protesting are also domestic terrorists, and that's not the case.
Got it. All right. Well, I'll respond to you, Kyle. I appreciate the call, man. I gave you a little bit more time than most other hosts would. But here's the thing, Kyle. What we're dealing with, and I will not back down from this, what we're dealing with is domestic terrorism. I'm talking specifically about criminal acts here. And if you want to leap and think that I'm applying this to people who are maybe peacefully protesting, then you're conflating that. I'm talking about specifically the stories of Seattle, Portland, and other cities where these groups, I don't know whether you want to call them Black Lives Matter or Antifa, but they're using improvised explosive devices that are used in Afghanistan on our police offices in our cities. And so that is, by definition, according to the FBI website, that is domestic terrorism. And that in no way improves the lives of minorities. And so if you want to improve the lives of minorities, let's cut out the anarchy and the looting and the destroying of minority cities. These are cities that have 60 to 70% minorities in them, and we are allowing mostly white people to destroy those cities. And so how on earth Does that make America and our cities better for minorities? It doesn't. We are watching our cities be destroyed for political purposes because they want to foment anarchy and domestic terrorism. And if you want to improve the lives of all Americans, including minorities, then we need to stop seeing 50 people shot in Chicago on a weekend. And we need to stop burning minority-owned businesses in Minnesota and Milwaukee and start to get our act together as a country. Shifting gears back to the phone lines, we will go to, let's go to Rick in Arkansas. Rick, welcome to Sandy Rios in the Morning.
Walker, thank you. That was a great commentary there. On this destruction and anarchy in America, it appears as if the left, the Democratic Party, has unbelievable audacity to not uphold the Constitution. Where's their oath of office of our senators, our House representatives, our congressmen, to uphold the Constitution? Mm-hmm. So, and the biggest thing that I tell them I see coming up, and what the anarchist and the Democratic Society, has perceived or are planning to implement, is an election that is not settled by the people if they can't steal it through the mail-in ballot, that the House will then pick the president. There's a saving grace in here, and I've been wanting to speak it, and I'm glad you're on the show today. The issue is the First Amendment. The First Amendment's our religious freedom, our right to free speech, but it also carries a very, very important issue that if it goes this way, we, the American people, have the right to retain our original powers established under the Constitution and strike out this government and start anew, which means we can sit there and say, President Trump, you have the right then to replace your cabinet. We have the right then to sit there and totally wipe out our Congress, our Senate, our House, and let start anew.
All right, Rick, appreciate the call, man. I think the best way to go about this is for people to vote in November and really vote. I said this yesterday, vote every election, vote for your city council, vote for your school board, vote for your governor, vote for your state senator, your national senator, your U.S. senator. The best way to fix our country. Number one, we need spiritual awakening. I think that's clear. We need God's intervention, divine intervention. But as far as our responsibility as Christians and as citizens, we just have to be involved, and we have to be persistent, and we have to vote, and we have to let our voice be heard. Because that's the way our system of government is set up. That's the way it's most effective. And in no way are we to commit domestic terrorist acts in order to achieve political goals, like the other side is doing. Sandy Rios in the Morning, American Family Radio. My name is Walker Wildman. Stay tuned to AFR.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.